Speaking of recording, you get to stare at the security videos while we record this podcast.
I do. I'm also looking at Joe's hair, which has reached maximum volume.
It's because I had it pull. I had it in this clip, but so that I could put my headphones on, I took the clip off.
Yeah. I think the cartoon character is Johnny Bravo. He's
oh yeah, I know who you're talking about.
With the giant blonde hair. Yeah. That's the vibes you're giving off right now.
Hey. This is Be Createful, a podcast about how we find fullness through creativity. I'm Joe.
And I'm Madison. And today on episode 60, we're talking about collaborative creativity.
Yes. Stop. Collaborate and listen. I always get stuck in my head. And that's all the words I know. Ice is back with a brand new invention.
There you go. You know a few. You know a few more.
So, collaboration.
Yes. A lot of the typical forms of creativity that we enjoy, like movies and music, are all collaborative works. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to give special time to chat about what it's like to work in a creative space while trying to collaborate, because the moment you introduce people into the mix, things can get complicated.
I honestly didn't think of this just in terms of creativity.
Yeah.
Because last week when we talked about scarcity and abundance, collaboration is an aspect of abundance.
Yes.
Versus the opposite, competition, which is comes from a scarcity mindset. So I was thinking of, I think it's a good follow-up to that conversation too.
Absolutely. And it touches on one of the things we like to talk about here at Make Do, and that's community. Instead of focusing on competing with each other, how can we better build relationships, both personal and otherwise, in the community?
Yes, because you can't have community without collaboration, really.
Absolutely not. That's why society functions like it does. Could you imagine if everyone was really and truly out for themselves? Ever read Lord of the Flies? It doesn't end well.
Could you also imagine how it would be if everyone was really and truly out for community?
Yeah, it probably would be a better place.
Yeah, there's no room for selfishness or like self-preservation in that utopia.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any stories of collaboration?
So a lot of the different things that I thought of tended to be where I was mostly working on my own, but I had people give opinions. But then I started thinking, most of what we do here at Make Do, the functions and the way that it, you know, we plan, is pretty collaborative, and not just between us two, Joe and I, but other people within the community and our board members, and suggestions from kids and adults. Like,
yeah,
all of that is what it takes to make do happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't necessarily have a specific story, but it seems to be an ongoing thing that happens here at Make Do.
It is a natural part of our work in ways that maybe other people, it isn't.
Very rarely do we separate out parts like, all right, I'm going to go work on this and you work on this, and then we'll put them together at the end. Everything is so interwoven here that we kind of have to collaborate at each step. Some things we can do on our own.
Yeah.
But not a lot.
Well, even like, so at the time, if you listen to this when it comes out in a couple of days, on Wednesday, we are doing a collaborative project at Midnight Oil, a local coffee shop, where we're going to be doing watercolor painting, but instead of watercolor, we're going to use coffee.
Oh, that's going to be so cool. And it's going to smell so great.
Yeah. And it's cheap. It's only $5. So if you're listening to this in time, you should come. But that's that is an example of the type of collaborative projects that we do.
Yes.
Particularly with other businesses, when mm-hmm. we can take their business, their priorities, whatever, mm-hmm. and like bring ours into it in a way that like makes sense for everybody.
Yes.
I have a story of a collaborative project that went awry.
Ooh.
And this is like drama. Not to do with creativity at all. And not awry in the sense of like total destruction, but just in the sense of people being like, wait, this isn't what I thought we were doing.
Okay.
So when I went to Ireland, we were partnering with a local church in Ireland, and they came to the States once for some of our training. We took a survey trip over there. We thought that we were having really good communication and that everyone was on the same page. Mm-hmm. We thought we were very clear on what we were trying to do, which was go start more of a house church model and community, like be really active in the communities where we were living. And what we found out after being there and once expectations weren't being met was that they thought we were coming to like infuse their church.
Like you were going to come and be a total part of their church.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Instead of like, no, we're here to partner with you, but not to like totally get wrapped up in the work that you're doing.
Y'all were going to basically be starting a whole nother church. Mm-hmm. But y'all
or
could be like
a whole nother like lot like little house churches, like nothing even.
It would be like a sister group, right? Where it's like they kind of help, but you have all of these other entities that are separate.
And I think, you know, we just didn't have the right language. You always assume that the other person is thinking like you are.
Oh, yeah.
And then that is how we get into all kinds of hiccups when it comes to collaboration or group projects when expectations aren't met, but it's because you don't ever even verbalize those. I mean, relationship, right, is the same.
Exactly. It makes me think of, well, I play Dungeons and Dragons, which is a collaborative role-playing game, and you are often presented with a problem of you got to go kill the dragon or there's a mysterious something happening in this town. And you as a group, five people typically, have to figure out how you're going to use each of your resources, different as they may be, to defeat or figure out whatever problem is going on. And what makes it interesting is that you're having to think of, okay, what would my character do? As well as my character brings something unique to the table. Oftentimes in D&D in the game, you want to have different characters who do different things. If everyone is always doing the same bit, then you're going to be missing something.
I'm going to interrupt you because I know nothing about D&D.
Yeah.
You make your own character, right?
You do.
Okay. So do you show up and you're like, here's my character. Who needs me in their group? Or do you get a group together and you're like, all right, for us to be successful as a group in this game of D&D, we need these characters. Who wants what? Like, how do you approach the project?
What tends to happen, at least in my groups, is that you come up with the person that you want to be. So whatever desire you have, you make that character. And then you come to the table and you find out what everyone else does. There are some groups where they meticulously plan out, all right, we need the person who can heal people, the person who can take the most damage. We need the person who knows how to do spells. But those tend to be, can be very formulaic, and you end up with a game that feels very samey.
It's not very practical is not the right word. It's Dungeons and Dragons. Nothing is practical.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like a very good reflection of real life, though, because whenever you, in your own friend group or in your family, you're not necessarily saying, now we need someone who is a caregiver. Now we need someone who will do this. Now we need, you know, like you kind of get what you get.
That's what it's like in real life. Or even, you know, if in media you see like a group of friends, there's not just like, not everyone can be funny. Not everyone can be smart. But you need a group of people to be themselves to make a friend group interesting. That's why people like watching Friends. They're all, the TV show, they're all different. Mm-hmm. And they bring something unique to the table.
Mm-hmm. So I think I had follow-up questions about D&D, but I don't even know.
I've waxed upon it quite a bit.
Yeah. It's fascinating to me because I'm like, but it's not real, like, because you make everything up.
Yeah.
And your dungeon master makes everything up.
It, For the most part. However, there are like, you know how our real world is governed by rules of like physics and, you know, the laws of nature.
D&D has physics?
Well, yeah, they have laws of like how magic works, how, you know, all of that has rules to it, but you get to make up your story within the confines of those rules. There's always going to be limitations because if there wasn't, the game, it wouldn't be a game and it wouldn't be fun.
Right. That's what I have trouble with.
Yeah.
I'm like, but who is making sure it is what it's supposed to be?
It's those frame of rules.
I didn't know that there was other rules. Okay. Yeah. How do you feel about group projects? I mean, basically that's collaboration is just an adult word for group project.
Yeah. You know, I think the general consensus is no one really likes them.
Why?
Because, I mean, I was usually the person who did a lot of work.
That's what I was going to say.
So I didn't
what,
like that.
What person were you?
I have a lot of friends who don't like group projects because you have to have extensive communication and try to coordinate schedules with people.
It definitely increases the workload. Like, even though they try to be like, no, you don't have to do every part of it.
Yes, but it takes a lot of perhaps emotional energy to try and, all right, how about this day? Oh, it doesn't work for you? Oh, how about this? Can we meet at this time? Who's going to do this part? And then if you bring into some of like the social aspects to it, who's going to lead it?
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to be perceived as the leader? Mm-hmm. Do you want to, are you concerned about looking bossy or looking weak or not smart?
Were you typically a leader in group projects? Give us an example of a group project that you would have done like in college.
Oh, in college.
Ooh. Or in anyone that pops up.
One that comes to mind is high school Spanish class. We were tasked to find a character, and then we were going to label that character's parts of the body. We had a person who was like, oh, we have to do this cartoon character. And I had no idea who this was. And they're like, oh, Madison, you're in art class. You will draw it. Well, then after that, no one else had any ideas. So I was the one executing the drawing and then like, okay, we need to include this and this and this. So I was kind of the coordinator or manager. And that's what tends to happen.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm the reluctant leader. If someone doesn't step up,
right,
I'll do
that's kind of how I always felt too. But I think if a leader isn't assigned, that is naturally what is going to happen. Like
someone is going to come forward and direct because that needs to happen.
Yeah. What you were just saying brought up a point I hadn't thought of before, that, you know, someone said, let's do this character. And so then you start going down that path. But if no one else is buying in to that original idea, then the project kind of hits a dead end. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes with collaborative projects, I think one thing that can be tricky is you start off from a bad place. You don't spend enough time in the brainstorming spot. You also can spend too long there if you're trying to be too precious with people's feelings or, you know, I'm not saying you shouldn't care about other people's feelings.
No, but that is part of the complex part of collaboration.
Yes.
You have to navigate people's feelings and then what's going to be good for the project.
Mm-hmm. And then sometimes if you start down a path that you're like, wait a minute, I don't think this is getting us where we want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you don't step up and say that and change direction, then you end up with a really bad project. The first group project I can remember, and I'm sure we did some before this, but it was in fourth grade and we read Island of the Blue Dolphins.
Ooh,
have you read that book?
I have not.
Okay, I'll just tell you really quick.
Okay, synopsis.
It's about this, it's in some like indigenous community, like on an island.
Okay.
I don't know the time period. And colonists or like invaders come and everyone, all the people that live on the island leave. And this one girl gets left there. I know, so sad. But also, like, I loved the book because she figures out how to, like, feed herself and all these things that she figures out how to do on her own on the Island of the Blue Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, our group project was that we had to create out of food our own island of the blue dolphin. So we use like coconut that we dyed green for the grass, and you like built her little hut and built all this stuff. And I think we had to use all food. I don't remember. And I'm pretty sure we had to bring our own supplies. Mm-hmm. But I also don't know how that worked, because not every kid would have been able to do that.
Yeah.
But that's the first time that I remember having to be like, well, what do you think we should do? Well, here's what I think we should do. And then my deep-seated problem of needing to be the best can kick in unhealthy ways, especially in a group project when I think someone doesn't have a good idea, or, you know, you're kind of looking around at what the other groups are doing. Anyway, I just said, you know how you don't have complete memories anymore, but I can just remember like being playing, doing the grass, like making it green with the food coloring and setting that out. And I remember being short, like, you know, how I was to the desk and stuff. So that's the first group project I remember.
Oh, yeah, that definitely brings back all sorts of like comparison, like looking at what other people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
That can be tough.
One thing we do in college, I was an interior design major, and we do a project that it's grown now, but it was a collaborative project when I was in school with just the graphic designers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to design a restaurant. And so the interior designers do the inside, obviously, and the graphic designers would do the signage and the menu and all of that. And now they've grown it to include marketing majors and communication majors and different things. But, and then I had an interior design partner.
Mm-hmm.
So there was like two of us who were having to actually collaborate on the interior design part.
Okay.
And then there would be two graphic designers who were doing, you know who my graphic designer partner was?
Who was it?
Brian Hickey.
Oh my goodness.
Whose kids come to make do now.
Yeah. But
anyway, so in that sense, you know, we weren't doing the graphic design part.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a skill set we didn't have. So we couldn't really do their work for them.
Yeah.
But you're still trying to come up with a project that seems collaborative
and cohesive. Yeah.
And I think that that is a more real world situation of how you have to collaborate. So when we're collaborating with Make Do, are the things that we're doing giving Make Do what we need? Are they upholding like our brand voice? And is the other business that we're collaborating with getting what they need?
Yes.
And sometimes that can be another tricky part, is are both parties getting what they're putting into it? Like, is it worth their time to collaborate? Are they getting something on the back end? Like, are they getting what they need and all of that?
Again, that's tough to navigate, because if you are, even if you think you're communicating well, the other party could be assuming that you're thinking just like they are. And because Make Do specifically is very unique, sometimes it's easy for people to misunderstand the kinds of the way that we want to be present within our community.
Right.
They may assume that we're something that we're not.
I think what helps for Make Do, and also as an individual in group projects, whether it's professional or in school or whatever, is being able to name what it is that you need.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can't articulate your own expectations, then they're going to be unmet, and then you're going to be disappointed. And sometimes it can be tricky to know what your expectations are, or even like if you're relying on someone else who's a professional in their field to help you make a decision or move forward in a collaborative process, and they don't let you know what you need to know.
Yeah.
Then there's a gaping hole with room for disappointment down the line. Like, I can think of several, and I won't throw anyone under the bus or, like, you know, name things now, but things that we've needed for Make Do, either projects of all kinds of things, digital or physical in our space or whatever. Where it was outside of my wheelhouse and I didn't know what was going on, but then that means I don't know what questions to ask.
Yes.
And then that can lead to some friction moving forward, and you have to have a way to navigate that friction in a professional manner.
That's why meetings are important, but even more so being prepared to come to those meetings, knowing exactly what you want, and then being willing to almost be annoying with how many questions you ask.
And it goes back to that original thing we were talking about if you start on the wrong path, mm-hmm. like in your brainstorming, if I'm like, this is what I think we need. And then we come up with all of these options, but then it takes us down a direction that isn't actually what we need. Mm-hmm. Then you end up with a product that isn't exactly what you needed, that doesn't suit your needs.
Yeah.
So
my mind is now going towards like thinking of people who are remodeling their house or like mm-hmm. when people come to me for some specific like, commission work, like to make something for them. And they're not, either I'm not a specialist or I am the specialist and they're not. And so being on both sides of that, when I interact with people, I tend to ask a lot of questions and I'm usually very upfront and I give them so much information.
But see, you're the expert. So like if it is alterations, you know all the questions to ask, mm-hmm. whereas the client is not going to even know that that is information that you need.
Yeah. So on the flip side, when I'm talking to someone who has that specialization, mm-hmm. I do tend to ask a lot of questions of, is this possible? What does it take to make this possible? And what is the process like for you? What's it going to take for you to be able to get what you need out of this as well as make what I want possible? Mm-hmm. Which those things could have all sorts of subsets of questions. And that's why I think it's good to write stuff down. You like write down your questions to like bring into somewhere.
And it can be helpful to walk through the actual steps.
Mm-hmm.
So like let's talk about McDo's turning 5 this year. And so we are going to have a birthday party to yes. celebrate McDo's 5th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So as we're looking at planning that event, it's easy for us to sit down and be like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. What do you want to do? So we just have to start walking through the process. Well, what are parts of a birthday party?
Mm-hmm.
Who's invited?
Yeah.
Who, you know, what do you do at a birthday party? Hey, and there's how do gifts. What are we going to do about that?
Yeah. And how do we make those pieces fit with what we are actually trying to do?
But walking through the process is what helps us make decisions for the project. And so you can do that same type of thing with something you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So like if I were coming to you for an alteration client, as an alteration client,
mm-hmm.
I could say, this is what I need. What's the first thing that you do as, you know, if you're hemming my jeans or mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah.
So then if you don't know anything about the thing that you need help with,
mm-hmm.
you can kind of see sticking points as that person is explaining their process.
Yep. It's true. There's a lot of intricacies that go into this type of communication. It's complicated because you're trying to handle someone else's not only emotions but like their time and money. Especially when you bring money into the situation, mm-hmm. it can be a little dicey.
You know, we do. So Searcy, as a town, I think tries a lot to have some fun collaborative events for the town that take a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
Or like when I was part of Art Alley, that needed to be very collaborative. And then when the leader steps down, if no one else steps up, what happens to the project, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it can be, that's another thing with collaborative efforts, is that when someone gets fatigued doing their job,
mm-hmm.
are other people going to step up or not? Or were they really just dead weight and that's why that person's getting fatigued?
Yeah.
Anyway, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I was just thinking in one of my art classes, the kids, I was talking to them about Yayoi Kusama, how she goes to an art studio and works and facilitates her work at her studio. She's an artist, famous artist, by the way. She's real cool. You should look her up. She goes to this art studio and runs it. And they're like, but wait, it's not just her making art. And that's when I took the time to explain to the kids that a lot of famous artists, once they get big enough, they don't have enough time or effort to be able to make every single piece of art on their own.
Uh-huh.
they give design and direction, but they have assistants that might actually be the ones chiseling or painting or coloring or doing whatever. And that was such a shock to them. And I think it can be that way when we experience services or pieces of media where we just assume, well, it's just this one person's idea. And so all of the stress and work was on this one person. But there's so many hidden people behind there. Like you were saying, you know, there might be a leader, but there's going to be all of these people underneath who are helping to support them. And if they're not, then that leader might be fatigued and need to step down mm-hmm. and like, I can't do this anymore.
Or if people aren't in the right place in the in the place that's best suited for them. So one time, this was in college, a friend and I were in a canoe, and like I was in the back of the canoe and she was in the front, and she wanted to switch. And I was like, okay. So we switch and very quickly ran into the bank because the back, like the stronger person needs to be in the back of the canoe, because if the stronger person is in the front, mm-hmm. then you can't steer the canoe.
You have
canoe
to steer from
right.
the back.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I also looked back and she was standing up in the canoe pretending she was Tiger Lily.
Oh. No, but this brings up an excellent point. In collaboration, you need to have humility to know and when to like defer to somebody else. You can't do it on your own. Michelangelo didn't paint the Sistine Chapel on his own. You may have this idea in your head of he was on his back the whole time painting that whole thing by himself. He did not. He relied on others to continue to make this beautiful piece of art. So sometimes you're going to need help and you need to defer to other people.
And that requires you to know yourself and your strengths and your weaknesses, and to know the strengths and weaknesses of the people that you're working with.
That's why people should take the time to get to know the person that you're collaborating mm-hmm. with.
So much work happens with people we don't know that well.
It's true. When I'm interacting with an alteration client, people may think, oh, you're just doing small talk to fill the air. I'm getting to know this client and building rapport and understanding what their needs are. You can tell a lot from a person from a short conversation about, you know, are they a person that's going to want this quickly? Are they going to be really particular about this work? Do they know a lot? Do they not know a lot? Like, all of that can be done through just some quick conversations. We have a volunteer that comes in and helps at Make Do. And she was telling me that in her line of work, she would call someone up, they'd do some small talk, and then she would ask them a question that she needed to know the answer to and hang up. Mm-hmm. And then later on, she would just like send them a quick email where it's like, hey, I need to know this. And they would get back to her very quickly. And she said that because she had spent the time getting to know the person already, when it came time to kind of get down to the nitty gritty and get the information she needed quickly, they were able to do it quickly and were willing to do it quickly because she had already spent the time getting to know the person. Mm-hmm. So collaboration isn't necessarily all about business all the time.
Right. And when you get to know people, it...
sorry, guys.
Madison, that's so loud.
I've got a paper bag in my office.
When you have a relationship, then you see that other person as a human.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was joking with some friends who both have new jobs. Well, I mean, new within the last year, but they've been remote for both of, you know, for the whole time they've been at these new jobs.
Oh, man.
And so you're not actually going into the office and getting to know anybody. Mm-hmm. And so one of them was talking about, oh, these Zoom happy hours that they do and all the icebreakers and stuff that they're doing virtually. Mm-hmm. And the husband was like, why is that necessary? Like, the whole point of office outings, of building relationships, because you had to see those people. But now if you don't have to see those people in the office, why do I need to get to know my coworkers?
Yeah.
And her point was, well, because I still have to work with my coworkers. Mm-hmm. And I am a better coworker when I know them.
Yes.
And you have grace for people if you're thinking, I've been waiting for 4 hours for this person to send me an email. I can't do my work until I hear from them. You know, it just makes you kinder to people when you know them, which makes us, in turn, better collaborators.
And you may find out something about them, like a strength that they have that isn't being utilized, and you can help that person to then be a better fit or find a new way to add something to the project.
Yeah, you can get people in the right spots in the canoe.
Exactly.
Any other musings in regards to collaboration?
No, I'm good.
You know, it's hard. I guess one thing we've done recently at Make Do is our mural.
Oh, yeah.
At 100 Families. And so, you know, I had expectations of what it would look like for us to collaborate on a design and make, you know.
Because the teens were going, they were kind of helping design it, right?
Yeah. And again, this was me. I am the leader of that group.
Yes.
Because I'm the adult.
Yes.
And so sometimes I can have expectations of them that aren't what they want at all. Or, you know, like they don't.
This is their first time doing anything like
this. Yeah.
So they don't know what goes into it or what's required of it.
Right. Or even in when we first started painting, I should have said, okay, as you're painting, it's different than painting on canvas. We're painting on a wall. Watch out for these things. Like, we're going to have drips if there's too much paint on your brush, or you don't have to paint all the way to the line. We'll fix that later. You know, I could have explained things a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And we have had a wonderful time together.
Oh,
it's
just an
example of like I was expecting maybe a little too much of them.
Mm-hmm.
In that beginning collaborative process.
Well, and you had never directed other people to paint mm-hmm. a mural before. So you were in that first time spot as well.
Mm-hmm.
It was so cute. I remember you showing off that picture where you all had like handprints all over yourself.
We didn't talk about this yet. So we've talked about what's hard about mm-hmm. collaborating. What do you think are some of the benefits? Like, why bother?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Why bother with these group projects?
Like, wait a minute, we didn't
get there.
If they're
so terrible. Mm-hmm. Because the things that come out of group projects are better, typically, than if one person had just worked on it.
I have an example of this.
Hit me with it.
That's immediate, as of yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
So Make Do is collaborating with a PR class at Harding at the university. So they came in yesterday for their second time kind of hearing us. We're just sharing our mission. They're deciding how they're going to collaborate, like what the project is going to be. Well, through the course of our conversation, because we're talking about some fundraising goals that we have for some scholarships, and their professor, who is also a parent of a kid who has come to classes at Make Do, suggested that we make kits, like lemonade stand kits, that kids could come pick up and then have a lemonade stand on their street to raise money for Make Do.
Which is brilliant.
So smart. So exactly in line with everything that we do. And now, like, she had that idea, and then I have been obsessed with it and mm-hmm. like have just thought of all these ways where we could make it a really, really good project.
Yeah. And then I have been tasked with trying to, like, all right, what are the supplies we're going to need?
Yeah.
What are all the itty bitty bits that we're going to do?
Yeah. And so we would never have, you know, sometimes we can get so focused on the work right in front of us and we know what we need, but sometimes it can be hard for us to find the creative solution that fits into what we're doing. And having another voice that is familiar with Make Do, but on the outside,
mm-hmm.
looking in, be like, this.
Yes. That helpful. That I experienced that with Richard and my friends when I am trying to make some creative something happen, when they step in and they're like, oh, well, have you considered this? And I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, that's brilliant. Why mm-hmm. didn't I think of that before? And it sometimes just takes a different mind looking in to give you that fresh take that you need, that energizes you, gets you excited, and then keeps you going in your project.
Yeah. A benefit that I see, which maybe is what you already said, I don't remember exactly how you said it.
Mm-hmm.
One person can't do everything.
Yeah.
So I already knew this. I mean, obviously, we talk all the time about how wonderful you are for what you do at Make Do. And I don't want to do what you do. Like, yeah. I don't want to teach the kids classes. Mm-hmm. But I think about this at my house. Like, it's just me. And I'm always looking around like, ugh, my yard is a mess. Ugh, mm-hmm. this is a mess. Ugh, this needs done. And then I have to remember, oh, wait, I'm just one person yep. here. I can't do everything. So what are my priorities? But that is why collaboration is important and everyone kind of, I don't even want to say pulling their weight because that's not what I mean, but like everyone helping in the process.
Mm-hmm. Well, recently you're always doing something on your house, uh-huh. but you recently told me that you pulled out some built-ins uh-huh. and there's other things that's going on and you were considering doing a project on your own, right? Mm-hmm. But then what happened? You've decided not to do that anymore.
No, I'm hiring a handyman.
yeah.
Because I still have unfinished project from August that mm-hmm. requires relocating some electrical stuff, which means I have to get in my attic. I don't want to do that. There's creepy crawlies up there and I don't know what else. And I just don't want to.
Yes.
And I like to feel really independent and like I can learn anything I want. And then I realized, but do I want this to be done or do I want to be the one to do it?
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking, no, my priority here is that this get done. So then that means I need to bring someone else in.
I think that touches on something. So oftentimes we don't want to get into collaborative projects. I think because a small part of us wants that pride of, I did this all by uh-huh, myself. Uh-huh. This was solely my idea and I executed it and I did it awesomely. Uh-huh. But that pride can often get in the way of progress.
Right. And of not even just progress, but of better. Of like...
yeah.
You know, the end is going to be better if this guy comes and does the drywall. I don't need to teach myself how to do the drywall just to say I did it all by myself.
Mm-hmm.
There's yeah. plenty of other, like what were we talking about last week? There's always more to go around.
Yes. There's other things that maybe would be more enjoyable for mm-hmm. you to learn rather than spending your time learning and then ending up maybe doing something on your house that wouldn't even look as good.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And for what? Like, for just the pride?
Yeah. But for some people, it's really worth that.
Yeah.
Let me see if I have another benefit to collaborating. Something that I wrote down was sometimes it's just so much easier when you collaborate with someone in the sense that you're not wasting your time like working on something and trying to brainstorm on your own. For an example, when I'm making samples for a class, Joe often comes in, looks at it and goes, well, what if you did this and this? Mm. And saves me probably 2 hours mm-hmm. worth of brainstorming on my own. And so it makes the process so much easier.
And having fresh eyes, like me coming in, it's not because I obviously knew how to do it better than you. It's that I'm coming in and seeing all the work you've already done. Mm-hmm. And so it gives me like a different view than you're having. Cause again, you're like down in the weeds walking the path.
Yes.
And it's like, I get to be above you. Like, oh, wait a minute. What if you go
mm-hmm.
this way and you can't see it because you've already poured so much into the direction that you're going.
Exactly. So I always appreciate when you do that. Because I definitely am like, oh, well, this is the idea. This is how I have to stick with it. Like, we recently made a monster version of our unicorn dream catchers.
Oh, yeah.
And you came in, you're like, well, what if you just made the horns like this? And I'm like, oh, yeah. Because it was hard for me to figure out what shape needed to happen.
Yes. Well, because when I looked at it, I was like, that doesn't look like a drag. Like, what mm-hmm. is this? This yes. looks weird because you had in your mind what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes that is what it takes is going to somebody and being like, what does this look like?
Yeah.
I'm too close to it. I can't tell mm-hmm. anymore.
Yeah.
And that can be, that feedback in itself can be collaborative, even if then I didn't come help you do the work at all. Like you decided mm-hmm. how you were going to change it. I just gave the feedback.
Yeah. But we need that. We need each other to kind of again, push forward. Otherwise, we can kind of get stuck doing the same thing over and over again.
You know a collaborative thing we do?
What's
that? Podcast.
Oh, yeah. The thing what we're doing right now?
Yeah.
You've often mentioned that you think it would be weird to just, for you to just sit here and wax about, you know, creativity on your own.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I would do it
either.
Because also, when we do this, I don't have to have all the ideas or all the thoughts on my own. Like, I think we bounce off of each other, right? So you tell a story and then I can say, oh, this is what sticks out to me in that. Or we sometimes we come to topics from completely different.
As you've probably heard on some of our like more interesting episodes.
Well, that's not how I thought about this at all. And so it is definitely collaborative. Even deciding what we're going to talk about.
Oh, yeah. We're usually like, hey, what have you been experiencing? And then just kind of go from there, which has also been really helpful.
And, but you know what, we, the expectations we've set and what we have agreed on is how much we're going to let the podcast take from us.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to keep it really casual, sometimes at the expense of a conversation that sounds really polished.
Yes.
And so sometimes we fall into a conversation that we're really excited about, or like by the end of it, we're like, man, that was a good conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I never know from the beginning which ones those are going to be.
It's true.
And so then sometimes I think, I don't know that we did that conversation any justice.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them feel a little laborious. Is that a word? Clunky.
It can, but you know, not everything can be spot on every time.
What?
I know we can't be the best every time.
What?
Sorry.
It's okay. I'm finding ways to let go of that.
Yeah. It can be hard. But something that I realized I'm getting out of the podcast is Joe often talks about her love language being drinks. I get all
drinks like Sonic. Like if you bring me Sonic,
yes,
it makes me feel really loved. Or if I offer to bring you Sonic, I want you to say yes.
And I've discovered that some of my love language that happens here at Make Do is getting to do some of these collaborative projects with you, because it lets me get to know you more.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, really, that's where the podcast came from, was our conversations of getting to know each other better. And
for me, that's not where it came from.
Oh, where?
It came from, it was not about getting to know each other better at all. It was about convincing people that creativity is amazing.
Well, we were having those conversations like as we were doing things in the
like
studio.
Wanting to share all the benefits of creativity that we would get to be sharing in class and we weren't. And we wanted to have another avenue to have those conversations. Yeah. Getting to know you better was just a pleasant byproduct.
Oh. Well, I wanted to get to know you. And so it was, for me, I enter in every conversation thinking about what can I learn about this person.
But that's what I think is so beautiful in your strength when we're talking about like what makes us good as a team, a collaborative team, is that you are definitely the more people centered of us, like people focused.
Mm-hmm.
Than I am. And not to say that I don't like people.
No.
It just takes me a little longer to warm up isn't even the right word. It just takes me a little bit longer to like step in to connect with people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you do that better than me.
Which is why I answer the phone.
When you're not here and I have to answer the phone sometimes, I get like, do I answer it or do I just let it go to voicemail?
Oh my goodness. All right. Yeah. Anything else before we move on to some tips?
I don't think so. I had like nothing written down. So we've gone beyond. But that's another thing, I guess, is that it, when there's two of us or three, however many, just like the conversations we had yesterday with the students, as people ask questions, as you talk, it like draws more things out. That's why I wouldn't want to do the podcast by myself. Like I wouldn't want to have to sit down and think, okay, what do I think about this topic? Because that is only beneficial to a few people. Like, I think it's a lot better when we are both able to express what we think, because people are going to connect to what you say on a certain thing, or what I say, or, you know, what comes out of it at the end as we like add our two voices together. So
Humans are so funny how integral our interconnectedness is and how much we really do truly need that. It just makes us better.
Speaking of being better.
Yes.
Tips for being a better collaborator.
All righty.
You go first.
I was about to say, let me open mine up. You'll probably be able to play off this one. Mine just says communicate. And so underneath that, I wrote, plan out your vision, leave room.
I just kicked something off of.
It's Joe's turn to kick things.
We're in Madison's office today because it's cold outside and it's a tight squeeze in here.
Yes, it is. Our break room / my office.
Communicate.
So, yes, communicate. Plan out your vision, leave room for criticism, and think, and again, leave room for ways that it can be improved. So it's that kind of hold on loosely sort of thing. Know what you want, but at the same time, leave room for for people to come in and say, hey, have you considered this or maybe this or maybe that idea is better for another time. Mm-hmm. And then again, leaving space for people to say, okay, what if we took that and then we did this with it? What if we enhanced it like this? Basically, not treating it like your precious detrimental to your idea.
Okay, can I take what you just said and break it into three tips?
Yeah,
because
sure.
That was just like all one big thing. I want to break it into like a three-step process.
Okay.
So I think the first thing is to know your goal,
mm-hmm.
like to be able to write it down. As Kendra, the lazy genius, would say, name what matters.
Yep.
So for us, it could be we're going to have a birthday party for Make Do. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
what is its purpose?
Yes. And so what that does is it gets us on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the story of my team going to Ireland, we thought we were on the same page because we were like using the same generic words or like we were talking about things in a way that was not specific. So that's the next step. Like, you name what matters, mm-hmm. you write your goal, you say, here's the page I'm on, and then you get specific.
Yes.
And so if that's you working with a client, you lay out specifically what you're going to do for that client. If it is a me and you coming up with a new class, we lay out specifically what that class is going to be or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third step is to always be reevaluating and like, before you get too far, you say, wait a minute, are we still on the right road? Mm-hmm. Have we seen a mile marker? Have we seen like the little sign that says what road we're on?
Yes. Is the party still the thing that we need it to be?
Yes. And are we still achieving that very first step, which was we wrote down our goal, we named what mattered, we said why we're doing this project. Are we still on track for that?
Beautiful.
But communicate.
But yeah, just like... And do whatever it takes for you to communicate. If it means writing it down, if it means asking questions, if it means coming back and double checking, if it means doing some research so that you know what it is you need to ask for.
I think it can be different depending on the type of relationship you have with the person you are collaborating.
Mm-hmm.
So you and I have a professional relationship and I am your boss. So mm-hmm. in that sense, we have a hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
We are extremely collaborative. I do not want to micromanage or like be the final decision maker.
Mm-hmm.
But not everyone that you collaborate with is it going to be that laid out.
Yes.
Like what about, hey, we're having Christmas at my house and there's going to be 20 people and we have to decide who's doing what for Christmas dinner.
Yep.
Like that is a collaborative project. So there's all kinds of ways where you maybe aren't going to have the systems in place that Madison and I have to check back in. I mean, we have a strategic plan for Make Do with 5 key things that we want.
Yes.
And everything we do needs to fit into at least one of those things. And if it doesn't, it goes out the window. You might not have that for your Christmas dinner.
No, but what you probably...
maybe you need to.
Yes, perhaps what you need is that one... All right, everything is going to go through this one person. Or everything that we are going to bring is going on this shared Google sheet. Like, there needs to be a centralized point where people can get information
mm-hmm.
in any project, mm-hmm. whether it's a person or a file or something mm-hmm. like that. So yeah, if you're planning, if you're trying to plan food, pick a person to be the, you know,
maybe
the
it's
info
whoever's
person.
House it's at or whatever. Yeah. Maybe that wasn't a great example, but like,
no, I think it's great because again, you're working around people's feelings and you are, you're having to think about, oh, well, I always bring the green bean casserole. Yeah. Well, you're still going to need someone to say, hey, so-and-so's bringing that already. Pick yeah. something else.
Yeah. And I just planned, my bestie and I are going on a trip. And so just trying to plan like, wait, where are we going to go? Wait, does that flight, what's the flights like for you? Mm-hmm. What about for me? Ooh, that doesn't work. We need to pick somewhere else. Ooh, let's get an Airbnb. Ooh, what are we going to, like, there's just so many questions.
Yes.
That if you can't say from the front, wait, what do you want from this trip?
That's something that I also wanted to say. If you're the kind of person who's like, oh, what do you want? And then when they ask you, you say, oh, I'm fine with whatever. Let me tell you, that helps no one. Mm-hmm. Please have an opinion. You don't, it doesn't make you bossy or whatever. So if you need permission to have an opinion, here it is. Have your opinion. Say, I would like to sleep in separate beds in this hotel room. Yeah. Or on this trip, at least once, I would like to eat Mexican food. Like,
yeah.
Just say what you need, because it will just help people to execute a plan that like actually has purpose. Because when someone comes to me and says, oh, you can pick whatever. Okay. I'm like, that is not helpful.
At least if you can't say what you want, name three things you don't want.
Yes.
Or something. Because sometimes it can be overwhelming to know what you want, mm-hmm. especially when you make decisions all the time. But if you can say, here's what I know I don't want.
Yeah.
Exactly. At my sister's house, her husband has like a bazillion movies on actual DVD. So whenever we go to her house and I'm like, let's watch a movie. And so I'll go through all the movies and I'll pull out, like, not take them out.
You'll like kind of like
I just
pull them
a little bit out, the ones that I would want to watch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe it's like 5 or 10. And then she'll go and push in the ones she doesn't want to watch. Mm-hmm. And then I'll go back and be like, what of what's left, I don't want to watch. You know, and then we just keep doing that until we end up with a movie.
Yeah. Oh, I love it when people are like, all right, here are 3 places I would like to go eat at. Uh-huh. Will you pick one of the 3? I'm like, great. I have options, but not so many options. I have no idea what you want.
So then maybe that's another tip is to, as you're making decisions, especially if you feel like you're the one who's always having to make the decisions, mm-hmm. flip that on its head and narrow it down for someone who you know is useless at pulling one thing out of an infinite number of options and say, here's 3, here's 5. What do you think?
Yeah. Oh, we have to do that all the time with fabric here when people are picking out for their quilts. Mm-hmm. Just yesterday, I had a little girl. She looked up at all the fabric. She's so short. And so she was just very intimidated. She's like, I don't know what to pick. Can you help me? So I was like, okay. I was like, what? They're making a pillowcase. Yeah. I'm like, all right, what's your bedspread like? She's like, it's purple. I was like, then here, let me show you all the purples. Uh-huh. And like, that way she still had choice. I wasn't picking it out for her, but it was less intimidating. Uh-huh. Here, pick from these 5 purples.
Yes. So I guess the tip would be kind of to like narrow things down or, you know, as you're starting your collaborative process or wherever
you are. And make sure you're not including things that you're like, I don't want to do that, but that other person might. Mm-hmm. No, don't even offer it as an option.
Well, because they should have said.
Exactly.
They should have said it was important to them and they didn't. So they already had that opportunity.
Yeah. You cannot be responsible for someone else's feelings in a collaborative project in the sense that you are not like, if someone didn't ask for what they needed and didn't make it clear, that's not on you.
That's what I was going to say. You can't be responsible for someone's feelings that they have not expressed or shared with you.
Yes.
I think you are responsible for treating people well when they've told you what they need.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I kind of went
back and forth on that one.
Yeah. We collaborated on it.
We did. Oh my word. We're so good. Do you have another one?
I took your one and turned it into my 3. So
oh, I'm sorry.
I already shared all of mine.
Let's see. I wrote down, be open and listen when you are communicating. Mm-hmm. Even though you may think someone's idea is strange or maybe doesn't fit right now, there's a possibility that idea could be put to use elsewhere. I'm the kind of person when I walk into a place of, okay, what can I glean from this class, this experience, even if I don't like it? Mm-hmm. There is always something to be gained. So keep that in mind when you're chatting with somebody.
I would add to what you're saying about listening, and I would say, and be curious. And mm-hmm. I think you have alluded to that, but I just wanted to say it. Like, whether that's, and we have a different podcast, I don't remember the episode number, about the art of communication, mm-hmm. and we probably touch on this more there as well. But when you're in specifically communication, a conversation with someone, which conversation is collaborative.
Yes.
It shuts the conversation down if you just disagree. Mm-hmm. But if you can be curious and get that person to explain more about what they mean, then it keeps the collaborative effort of the conversation going.
Jo does this all the time with me. She's like, can you just explain what you mean by that? And then it gives me an opportunity to better express myself. Yes, no, I appreciate it though. Because as someone who is a little alternative and whose mind maybe works a little different than a lot of people's, it's nice when someone's like, oh, well, hey, what do you mean by that? And it gives me an opportunity to better express myself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just had a conversation like that last night.
Oh, see, those are good ones.
Yeah. Well, I have learned that I already know what I think, and I think what I think is right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, but I don't know what you think. Mm-hmm. And when you say something, I think I know what you mean, but I don't really, what I'm learning through listening to conversations on social media, seeing conversations, and I'm talking about the polarizing conversations, right?
Yes.
Seeing all of that stuff going on, what I'm learning is that people on either side of the conversation are actually having two separate conversations, because person A says something and person B thinks that they know what they mean, mm-hmm. and they think it's an attack. But if they ask questions, they would see that there's actually more common ground than they realize. But that's not our default.
No. We, especially with people we don't know, we can get really defensive, mm-hmm. which is why I think it's important to have people who are different than you, who think differently, who are part of your friend group, who then can bring, you know, different ideas in a friendly environment.
Because when you have a relationship, now we're having a conversation on the art of communication,
yes.
but I think it's worthwhile. When you are in relationship with someone, you have those conversations in good faith.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone says something, you aren't automatically assuming that they are attacking you personally. And that's what happens when we have conversations online. When we're having conversations in bad faith, you're automatically calling the other side dumb or stupid or, you know, whatever, because you don't know them. And mm-hmm. it's easy to strip humanity out from someone that we don't know. It just makes them our opposition. And so, yeah, just ask questions.
And that's why it's important, again, to get to know people that you're collaborating with. That way, some of those misunderstandings, you can either ask questions about it, or you already know, I don't think they actually meant mm-hmm. what they said. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of go from there. And my last one is be humble. So, you know, if you really want to do the project on your own, just for the sake of doing the project on your own, maybe consider what is actually important to mm-hmm. you. If that is what is most important, go for it. If not, consider making it a collaborative project. Mm-hmm. When you're getting feedback about your idea, be humble and be willing to listen, because more than likely that person's going to help you improve your idea.
Mm-hmm.
So just be humble and put your pride aside, especially when you're in a collaborative environment.
Mm-hmm. The fact that you are at the table at all probably says that that person values your, okay, let's talk about me and you again. You are here because I think you're good at your job. If you were not good at your job, I would not have offered it to you and you would not be here.
Woo.
So if I come in and offer feedback or question the way that you're doing something, it's not me telling you are not good at your job.
Mm-hmm.
That
has been affirmed by the fact that I am still here.
Yeah, and I say it every other week on the podcast. But I don't want to say we can't take things personally, because we are persons and yes. things are personal, but not everything is about us. Not every critique that you would have of our relationship is about me as a person.
Yes.
It's about you not getting what you need.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's me needing to find a way as I can through my person to give you what you need.
It is complicated.
We just
and
solved
difficult.
All the problems for every.
So now you will never fight with anyone. You'll love no. group projects from now
yep.
on.
Just talk about it.
That's the thing is that even though you're saying like, don't take it totally personally, like it's not about if someone's criticizing, it's not about you as a human being. It's just about the idea. You are not your idea. There's some separation there. But sometimes it doesn't always feel that way. And so that's why group mm-hmm. projects tend to have this weird, awkward dance of, what about this? What about, like, lots of indecision.
And that's why we sugarcoat things, right?
Yes.
Because you know you have something hard to say and you're sugarcoating it to make the pill go down smoother.
Yes.
And sometimes that actually increases people's anxiety because they know that you're beating around the bush. Let's use another metaphor. Mm-hmm. And you're not just saying what you mean.
Yeah.
But it can also be hard to say what you mean when you don't have the safety net of relationship.
Yeah. Sometimes you don't have the opportunity to get to know someone in collaboration. Mm-hmm.
That's also why I love myself a code word. Because it's a way to say. So Madison's code word for me when I'm being a little too aggressive in what I think we can get done mm-hmm. is sparkle ball. So when you say that, I don't have to take it personally. Like, Madison thinks I'm too much.
Mm-hmm.
I can then hear you say, Joe, we're doing enough.
Mm-hmm.
Slow down.
Mm-hmm.
And I can be like, oh, okay, yeah, you're right.
Yep. Yeah, so. Just, yeah.
What's your sweet this week?
My sweet is that recently I feel like I am finding joy again. So a few episodes back, I was kind of like in a real depressive episode and Joe helped me kind of figure out, find my way through it.
With your creativity specifically, that episode.
Yes.
About.
And although I hated being sick with COVID, those 5 days of being forced to rest has really helped me jumpstart my ideas that I need for summer and my own creative work at home.
Mm.
I've started dressing more how I like. I'm even wearing some makeup again. Like,
I wore makeup 2 days this week, and my sister said in a reply to an Insta story, are you wearing makeup?
It's just sometimes I was like, yeah, I'd like feel the desire again to create and
what
to
creative
do the
projects
things.
Are you doing at home?
So
like on your house or sewing? Or
yeah, what? Both actually. I made a nice little heart overskirt for Valentine's Day, all hand sewn, which is not normally something that I do, but I just felt like doing it.
Well, did you wear it here?
No, I haven't worn it here.
Oh, okay. Valentine's Day is over.
I know. I made it like the Sunday before Valentine's Day and
oh.
on Valentine's Day.
Oh, okay.
I made it. And then I wore it this past Sunday because I was sick the Sunday
oh.
before. I was like, I'm going to wear it anyways. Life's too short. I'm like painting organizers and shelves for my house and getting rid of lots of things.
No,
just
I
really
love getting rid of things.
Yeah, I've got a box going right now. It's great.
I have a box going too that Pip has chewed on because, you know, she loves to chew on boxes. I'm going to take it to the sharing shop and they're going to say, what is wrong with this box?
You know,
my dog ate
I took a box to Goodwill and my dog likes to chew the corners off. So the three sides are all uh-huh. gone. So it's like this hole where the corner used to be. Whereas like Pip, she chews along the edges yeah. of the box. So
she
the
chews
flaps,
like the lids. Yeah, and, the flap of the box.
And instead of being rectangles, they're domes. It's great. But yeah, so that's my sweet. I'm finding joy in life again, which
yeah.
kind of makes it sound like real, oh man, Madison was in a bad place. But no,
but
it was just.
You don't notice that you're in a bad place till you're in a good place.
Yeah.
I felt that way with Make Do. I was just speaking to one of my board members this week about, and I think I talked about this as my sweet last week,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't realize the toll that COVID had taken on me professionally because mm-hmm. we never had to really shut down, you know. I never was afraid we were going to have to close permanently. But we just hadn't been able to be doing what we want to do. Mm-hmm. And then now that we are having conversations about new things and stuff, it's really lit a fire of, I don't know, excitement in me. Anyway, my sweet this week is that I found 3 pairs of jeans at Walmart that I like.
What?
And they're all different. So it's not like 3 pairs
of the same style.
So they're all different. None of them are skinny jeans, which I've been wearing forever. Ugh, so chuggy. So none of them are skinny jeans.
Wow.
And like the ones I'm wearing now, I've been wearing pretty much for 2 weeks straight. And I love them.
They're great.
They almost feel like leggings. I mean, because they're loose. They're like not tight and cutting into me and stuff.
Yeah. They're very forgiving. And they're a nice light wash. Yeah, they're a light wash. Very in right now.
Very different for me too. So I've just been feeling cute.
Well, you are cute.
Thanks.
Yeah. My sour is that it is once again super cold.
But this will probably be the last time. Just let it be cold.
I guess. We had yesterday, it was like 65 degrees in the morning. I wore like a nice skirt and like a cute little sweater on top. Like I was feeling it. And now it's below 32 degrees and I don't like it.
It is colder than I thought it was going to be because I left without a jacket. I know, and I have to get gas at some point today.
No, you wrap yourself up in one of our quilts.
I like the cold. Now, I will be sour if we have to cancel the quilting class again because we had to cancel it last time and this is the makeup weekend. Yeah. But I don't think it's supposed to be.
No, like that. I think it should be gone before tomorrow. This weekend. Yeah. I'm hoping. Well, what's your sour
what's
then?
What's my sour? I didn't write one down. I guess my sour is because I'm so excited about everything that's happening at Make Do, I'm not getting anything done. I am having so many plates spinning in the air, and I want to work on them all at once. And so then I just end up coming into Madison's office and telling her more ideas I'm coming up with instead of executing the ideas that we already have.
Yeah. Well, that's been tough for you before, the executing part.
Yep. It's not always my strength.
Yeah.
Now, when I do start executing, it will be executed well.
Oh boy, will
it's just sometimes I don't want to.
It's like that video of like, there was a video I saw of a little dog and I guess it was a couple that owned him. And so they run in opposite directions and the dog, to see who the dog would run after. Mm-hmm. And the dog like looks both ways and then just spins around in a circle. I feel like that's what you are. You're like, so many good ideas. And then you just spin in a circle.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny. Okay, that's the end of our podcast. I was gonna sing a song like Vanilla Ice, but I couldn't remember the words or the tune. So we'll do this instead. It can be a collaboration song.
Sound a little like Lady Gaga.
Oh.
I'm on the right track, baby. I was born this way.
Oh, yeah. I like have it. That in mind. I had nothing in mind when I started.
You're fabulous like she is. It works.
Oh, thank you. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you to my dear, dear friend, Craig Hudson, for our very createful theme music. You can hear more of Craig's music on Spotify under Craig Hudson. That's Hudson with a T. Or you can just click on the link in the show notes. Also, be sure to connect with Make Do on Instagram at Make Do Create or on Facebook at Make Do Cersei. And visit our website, makedocreate.org, for upcoming classes, show notes, to order a face mask, lots of things. We'll be back here with another episode next Monday. Have a good week, y'all.